Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2020-277, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company versus the City of Cleveland et al. For the appellant, cross appellant, Mr. Phillips.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I'm Greg Phillips for the appellant, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, and I wish to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a constitutional case. By its own actions, the City of Cleveland has created an artificial surplus of electricity, and its sales to non-inhabitants under Hance, Britt, and Toledo Edison are unlawful. A ruling enforcing those precedents will not in any way affect Cleveland's home rule power to provide service to its inhabitants. Not enforcing them, on the other hand, would disrupt the state's regulated electricity markets and ultimately harm Ohioans across the state, allowing municipalities to unfairly compete by cherry-picking the largest customers with discounts.
Counselor, what's the evidence that the surplus Cleveland has or uses was artificially created?
The evidence, Your Honor, is that the City of Cleveland generates virtually no electricity and hasn't since the 1970s. CPP purchases virtually all its electricity in real time, and it hasn't. It tailors its purchases to actual demand, buying no more than its customers actually consume. Third, there a very high percentage of its purchases, some 45%, are made under requirements contracts. In contrast, only 3% of its sales outside the city are outside the city. CPP can comply with the Constitution simply by reducing its requirements purchases to exclude its non-inhabiting customers.
Indeed, it's not CEI's assertion then that the city is in violation of the Constitution simply because it has these contracts outside the city.
It is also the step of purchasing the electricity and then selling it to non-inhabiting customers like Brooklyn. Indeed.
But having the agreements in and of themselves don't constitute a violation.
Having the agreements in and of themselves don't constitute the violation. The violation is purchasing more than is needed for the inhabitants of Cleveland. It's buying excess electricity under its requirements contracts, which it can easily avoid, and then selling it to non-inhabitants.
Okay.
Indeed, the undisputed expert testimony was that CPP need never obtain or maintain any excess supply of electricity, and CPP doesn't dispute that it can purchase only the kilowatt hours it needs for Cleveland. I want to take a step back and give the court a roadmap for my argument. CEI respectfully requests that this court do three things. First, this court should overturn the 8th District's other purposes doctrine, which it devised out of whole cloth. It has no basis in the constitutional text and is expressly foreclosed by Britt. Second, the court should reverse the 8th District's denial of summary judgment for many of the reasons I just discussed. CPP sells to non-inhabitants only because it wants to, not because it has to, and certainly not because of a compelling necessity to do so. The Constitution grants CPP no power to engage in discretionary sales outside the city. Any sales to non-inhabitants must be necessary and unavoidable in operating a municipal utility to supply to its inhabitants, the sole purpose authorized under Article 18.
And what's your authority for that, that it has to be necessary?
The authority, Your Honor, is Britt, and the text of the Constitution itself. The other purposes doctrine, Your Honor, suffers from three fatal flaws. It contradicts the plain language of the Constitution. The test is ripe for abuse, and it would be all but impossible for the lower courts to administer. First, the Constitution. The plain language of Section 4 authorizes only one legitimate purpose for a municipal utility to purchase electricity. to supply it to the municipality or its inhabitants. And Section 6 reiterates the same sole purpose. Neither section contains an express grant of power for other purposes, nor can such a power be found by implication for two reasons. First, the constitutional text has to have meaning. Allowing sales to non-inhabitants for unenumerated other purposes will eviscerate all meaning from the words chosen by the framers in Section 6 for the purpose of supplying the municipality and its inhabitants. And if the words chosen by the framers aren't given effect, it will greatly expand municipal power in a way the framers never envisioned. Second, Britt forecloses any finding of an implied power in this case. Any implied power requires a compelling necessity. It can't be inferred merely because it's economically or politically advantageous or for the city's convenience or economy. But the other purposes doctrine inverts Britt's analysis. It affirms implied powers precisely because they're economically advantageous or convenient for the city. The test also encourages municipalities to use pretexts to obscure the real purpose for brokering to non-inhabitants, which is to make money. Remember, the PJM wholesale markets have taken virtually all the economic risk out of brokering. Now, if not reversed, the other purposes doctrine would greatly erode the only legal barrier to brokering. The predictable result will be much more brokering and fact-intensive litigation over municipal motives. But how are the lower courts supposed to apply?
Counselor, you keep calling this a doctrine the Eighth District adopted, but as I read it, the Eighth District largely did what you wanted them to do and said that Cleveland could only purchase power for the purpose of supplying its customers. And then had some kind of broad language about things that might be looked at as part of purpose. And some of them would seem hard to argue with. Reliability and long-term purchase contract. I think we'd all agree that that's something that might be part of purchasing for your customer, for the city, and you may have some excess of point. Economies of scale. Certainly, if the city could purchase electricity cheaper under a certain contract, and I don't think there's anything required to spend more money than it has to. So I guess I'm trying to understand how you come up with that there's some new doctrine here instead of just asking us to affirm the Ninth District, but more narrowly tailor what it said.
That is, in essence, what we're asking, Your Honor. But those factors, those considerations that you raised, economies and scale, reliability, those are all fair factors to consider so long as the purchase is for the city and its inhabitants. If the city takes those factors into account, yet purchases the electricity for sale outside the city, that is unconstitutional, and that is what we've argued in our briefs.
But let me ask you, okay, that's helpful, thank you. Let me ask you, help me understand exactly what you want to do and then what happens. I mean, as I understand it, the only thing you asked for below on summary judgment was a declaratory judgment essentially saying that Cleveland couldn't purchase for other than its own use, and any surplus essentially, if it could only be something that was generated for something that was unavoidable after Cleveland purchased for its own use. But all you asked for is a declaratory judgment, as I understand it. So in your view, this would go back for a trial where the court would determine exactly how that legal proposition applied to the facts. Is that what you're asking us for?
We're asking for summary judgment and the issuance of the declaratory judgment. And after that, I expect that the trial court proceedings will be limited to an injunction that will be tailored to the actual sales to non-inhabitants. So
there was no request for an injunction, right? You didn't move for summary judgments on an injunctive relief. So do you envision that there would be a trial on that, or they would, what are you envisioning would happen?
I envision that on remand before the trial court will have the declaratory judgment or will issue it. And then the sales to non-inhabitants will be examined and the injunctive relief will be tailored specifically to CPP's actual conduct in selling to non-inhabitants. Okay. So it'd be my view is that it'll be a limited proceeding with respect to the injunctive relief.
Thank you.
Mr. Phillips, is it just Cleveland Public Power that purchases from PJM, or is that something that larger suppliers like First Energy also purchase from?
Larger suppliers like CEI purchases from PJM, but municipal utilities across the state are also purchasing from PJM. Essentially, all the major market participants are also participants in PJM.
And so how do we deal with PJM's requirement that its buyers, according to contract, have to have a certain reserve, which necessitates buying more than exactly what might be needed according to projections?
Your Honor, PJM does require a capacity reserve margin. That is not the same thing as an energy reserve margin. The 8th District erroneously misconstrued the capacity reserve margin to be an energy reserve margin. Capacity is just the right to obtain or buy electricity if and when needed. It's not the same thing as kilowatt hours of electricity. This court in Hants, some 62 years ago, made clear that capacity is not the proper measure of a Section 6 surplus. Actual kilowatt hours supplied over a period of time is the proper measure. So CPP, by its own choices, has decided to participate in PJM. And as a requirement of that, it has to have a capacity reserve margin. But the key word is it's a reserve. It's a reserve for its existing customers that cannot then be reappropriated to sell to other customers. It has to be maintained as a reserve for existing customers so that if there's unexpected demand peaks at a particular time, it's ready to service them just like all the other participants.
One last question. In this market, is there any other wholesaler that CPP could buy from other than PJM? I just don't understand how these, PJM's the wholesaler. Is it assigned a particular market?
I believe that PJM is the one wholesaler available to CPP. I'm not aware of another one. Obviously, there are regional transmission organizations around the country, but I do not believe that CPP can participate outside the region.
Right. So if CPP chose, as you said, to use PJM, if it chose not to, what would its alternatives be to be able to supply power besides generating it itself?
Well, besides generating itself, that's a big but. But in addition to that, it could go back to bilateral contracts with suppliers and receive electricity that way. I believe that continues to be an option. But
it's not as cost effective, though, is it?
It has inefficiencies that we described in our brief. You know, each transaction would need to be looked at to see how cost effective it would be for First Energy.
Thank you.
For CPP. Once the other purposes doctrine is overturned, there will be nothing left for trial, as I've discussed. Summary judgment should be entered for CEI on the record before the trial court, especially in light of finding of fact number 7, that CPP has the flexibility to increase or reduce its electrical supply through various contracts and commitments. CPP has never challenged this finding of fact. CPP has never even tried to show that it has a genuine surplus of kilowatt hours of electricity. Indeed, the undisputed material facts foreclose any genuine surplus. See that my time is up. I will reserve my remaining arguments for rebuttal.
Okay, keep in mind, Mr. Phillips, you've used all your time. Ms. Boyko.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, honorable justices, may it please the court. My name is Kim Boyko with Carpenter, Lipson, Leland. I am counsel for appellees and cross appellants, the City of Cleveland and Cleveland Public Power. I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal on cross appeal. The Ohio Constitution gives municipalities the express authority to own, operate, and regulate utilities. And this court has held that they may do so in a proprietary, business-like fashion, as your honors have pointed out this morning. There are only two limits on this express authority. One is set by the express language of the Constitution, and one by this court's interpretation of that Constitution. There are only, therefore, two questions that this court must answer. Whether the city has exceeded the 50% limitation set by Article 18, Section 6 of the Constitution in selling or agreeing to sell utility service or products to entities outside the municipal boundaries. And secondly, whether the city has purchased electricity solely for the purpose of reselling the entire amount of the purchased electricity to an entity outside its boundaries, as set forth by this court in Toledo Edison versus Bryan. Counselor, the answers to both of these questions are no.
Counselor, let me ask you a question. And I don't think the in excess of 50% is an issue here, but do you agree with Mr. Phillips' statement that the city intentionally purchases more electricity than is needed for its inhabitants?
Absolutely not, Justice Stewart. The city has what's called a supply portfolio. And the city's supply portfolio is made up of many different supply contracts.
But
we have long-term, short-term.
But in that portfolio, isn't the contract, the long-term contract with Brooklyn, part of that portfolio?
Your Honor, the portfolio is done in terms. So there's a five-year term and there are also annual supply portfolios. So what happens is we have to supply for existing customers at the time that the portfolio is put together. And a load-serving entity is required to serve all of its customers with energy and capacity. Despite what CEI says, we are required to support capacity.
But don't those customers in that portfolio include the city of Brooklyn?
It depends on what time the portfolio is created, Your Honor, not necessarily. The city has to supply all of its residents. Right now, importantly, the city only supplies one third, and that means CEI supplies two thirds of its residents.
Excuse me, Counselor, isn't it a 10-year contract with Brooklyn?
Your Honor, there is a 10-year contract that came into being in 2019.
So for the next 10 years, you have to, when you calculate how much you need, you have to take into consideration the amount you have to supply Brooklyn, right?
Your Honor, there's a couple things with the Brooklyn contract. Let me explain.
It seems like a yes or no question. Don't you have to, when you're considering what you need to buy for the next year, 10 years, don't you need to budget that you need to have enough to supply Brooklyn?
Your Honor, it's not as simple as you would think. It's not just a kilowatt hour basis. There's a capacity requirement and a distribution requirement.
Okay, fine. But can you choose not to supply? You have a contract to supply Brooklyn for the next 10 years.
We have a contract
to
supply.
Fulfill that, right? So you have to buy electricity necessary to fulfill that contract.
We have to build assets and create assets sufficient to supply the distribution service, the generation service, and the capacity service that goes to Brooklyn from 2019 on.
So the answer is yes. Then.
Well, I guess you really don't have to because you could be in a breach of contract.
Well, Your Honor, there are many parts of the contract. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. The contract was entered into in a 10-year contract because the city of Brooklyn asked the city to bury the lines. So that comes at a significant cost to the city. So in order to provide distribution service to Brooklyn for only one facility, one rec center right now, that facility had to have buried lines. And so in exchange for the cost of those buried lines, the city did agree to do a long-term contract, but they had to do it economically and at the benefit of all of its customers to make it cost-effective. And so to do that, they had to enter into a long-term contract for distribution service.
Is there ever a time then with that cost factor built into the contract, is there ever a time where the city of Brooklyn would have to continue to pay the city of Cleveland for those elongated costs over time, but not supply electricity?
Your Honor, I, as you pointed out, you can breach contracts, and the terms of the Brooklyn contract were not in the record in this case, beyond what I've shared with you so far. There's always several terms, but the point of the contract is that it was entered into in order to make the provision of service to that customer cost effective and to build a solar project which brought renewable energy into the city. I think it's important for you all to know that the actual solar from the Brooklyn Solar Project enters CEI's distribution system. It is does not directly serve the city of Brooklyn. So it enters it enters the city's distribution system, and this it becomes part of the city's generation power. The city actually has contracts with AMP, which also creates an ownership interest in those generating resources. So the city enters into these contracts and actually has ownership interest in assets that create both generation and supply. And so when you enter—
If we agree with the Court of Appeals that the city wasn't entitled to summary judgment because this is really more about the creation of an artificial surplus, or whether the city's created an artificial surplus, is there evidence that the city has a surplus for any other reason than to supply the city of Brooklyn over its 10-year contract?
Yes, Your Honor. Both the lower court and the 8th District found that there was evidence in the record to show that the city has entered into a variety of contracts, short-term, long-term assets, and they also do generate their own power, and that all of those are done in a portfolio construct.
I think both courts found that there's no way the city generates enough of its own power in and of itself, even to supply its own inhabitants.
That's correct, Your Honor. It is not cost-effective for the city to generate its own power from its old power plants. So in order to construct new ones, we have to enter into arrangements to do that, such as the Brooklyn Solar Project, and bring in renewable energy into the city of Cleveland.
But does that violate the Constitution? Is it, as CEI is saying, the municipal power isn't regulated, it then is unfair competition. Is the city flouting the terms such that if it creates an artificial surplus or it purchases more kilowatts than needed, and I think, and as Mr. Phillips said, just purchased in real time, then doesn't that allow the city to have more than it needs so that it can go out on the market and raise revenue?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. First of all, Section 4 of the Constitution specifically allows the purchase of electricity. It's generate or purchase electricity. Section 6 makes a limitation of that purchase and resale to outside entities. But Section 4 specifically allows it.
Section 4 allows purchase of electricity for use to serve customers of the city. It doesn't, there's nothing in Section 4 that allows a city to buy electricity solely for the purpose of reselling it.
Your Honor, Section 4 allows municipal utilities to purchase electricity that's primarily for the purpose of supplying its inhabitants.
Where does you find the word primarily in that Section 4?
Your Honor, that's the way that, this court has interpreted Section 4 and Section 6. This court in Toledo Edison said, read in pari materia, Sections 4 and 6 allow a municipality to purchase electricity primarily for the purpose of supplying its residents and reselling only surplus electricity from that purchase to entities outside the municipality. This interpretation necessarily precludes a municipality from purchasing electricity solely for the purpose of reselling the entire amount of the purchased electricity to an entity outside the city's limits. That's in Toledo Edison at page 292. That's what this court said. And well, if it meant any amount.
Excuse me, but that's clearly the court didn't mean that as long as you can lump something into one big contract, you can, and you, the city uses some of it, that the city can engage in unlimited brokerage, right? I mean, it shouldn't matter for constitutional purposes whether the city purchases in one contract or two contracts or three contracts or how it's all lumped together, right?
Your Honor, I think that the court in Toledo Edison used the facts of that case where there were three municipalities serving one entity outside and it was the entire amount they purchased specifically to serve that one commercial customer. And that is not what's going on here. But it isn't unlimited, Your Honor. Section 6 does put a limit on it, and that protects against the unfettered competition that CEI is concerned about. And just for the record, the municipalities are regulated. They're very heavily regulated, despite CEI's assertion. But going back to whether the city needs to generate its own electricity, it does not. The city has a variety of assets and contracts, and they have to because it's required by the regional transmission organization. They have to have these contracts to be able to serve any customer at any time based on their annual peak demand, which is the highest demand in 1 year. In order to do that, you have to make projections and forecasts. If a customer leaves and goes to CEI, then the city will actually have surplus at that time and they can resell it. There, a load serving entity is required to purchase electricity and capacity, and building those capacity assets actually creates the energy that creates the surplus. There's no de facto brokering here.
Council, any excess, has that been attributed to customers leaving and going to another source like CEI or whatever else is available?
Your Honor, there is evidence both from expert witness Benteen and expert witness Williams that talk about the customers leaving the system and talk about the portfolio approach and how that would leave excess and surplus that could be then.
Right. And the council, I believe you said that in theory, that's what the basis would be. I'm asking you for any data. Do you have data that shows that any excess that's CPP had and then later sold was directly related to customers leaving your service for another provider?
Your Honor, there is data in the record. I didn't say in theory, I didn't believe. If I did, I apologize. There's record from expert witness Benteen and expert witness Williams that say that there has been people that come and go, customers off of the system, and that leaves from the portfolio approach that's purchased either 5 years in advance, 1 year in advance, depending on the type of contract, that would then create excess or surplus electricity that then could be sold.
Council, let me ask it this way. Assume you have a bad weather situation like we saw in Texas, only let's say it's summer's heat, so people want air conditioning. Without breaching the contract with Brooklyn, is CPP required to sell to Brooklyn instead of using that energy for its inhabitants?
Your Honor, there's a 15% reserve margin built into the contract. So the city is able to supply its customers. The city only serves one.
I'm saying an emergency over and above the 15%. I understand the 15%.
Right. I believe, Your Honor, because we're only selling 3% of our total load, that there would be significant, there would be additional power and surplus available to serve during a time of a cold weather event.
Well, there I'm saying a warm weather event, and let's say it's 20 or 30% increase, okay? Can CPP stop providing electricity to Brooklyn and use that electricity for its own inhabitants without breaching the contract with Brooklyn?
Your Honor, every electric contract that I've done, I did not draft the City of Brooklyn one, does have various force majeure clauses and does have termination clauses. So I would expect that, yes, that could happen. The city is obligated to provide power to its residents, and it would provide power to its residents. The Ohio Constitution grants the city the express authority to sell the surplus products and services to customers outside of the municipality.
Ms. Boyko, question for you. It seems that in your briefing that you want us to reverse the, or actually you want us to apply Toledo Edison, but it's the Hantz decision that inserted the term primarily into the interpretation of furnishing services to city's own inhabitants. Wouldn't it be better just to look at the Constitution and use that, because the Toledo Edison case doesn't really square factually with this case here. And it's been 20 years, as the other side has argued. Wouldn't we be better just to simply apply the state constitution to your situation anew?
Yes, Your Honor, we fully support applying and enforcing the Constitution as written and refrain from creating new law that nullifies part of the Constitution as requested, and reserve and reverse the 8th District's decision to reinstate the judgment of the trial court, where the trial court did in fact apply the Constitution as written. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Phillips, you may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points on rebuttal quickly. First, there was a discussion of the Toledo Edison Court's reference to primarily selling primarily to the inhabitants of the city. The existence of a genuine surplus is the sine qua non of any sales to non-inhabitants under this court's jurisprudence. In both Hantz and Toledo Edison, the court reiterated the surplus requirement in the same sentence it used the word primarily. In Toledo Edison, the city was said that it could resell only surplus product from a purchase primarily for inhabitants. This court has never held that a city could sell artificial surplus to non-inhabitants so long as its operations were primarily to serve.
Yes, Mr. Phillips, let me quickly ask you, what constitutes legitimate surplus? I mean, how much over kilowatt hours needed for its inhabitants does a city have? How much of a margin is there? What constitutes artificial?
In this case, Your Honor, it's going to be a fact-intensive inquiry in each case.
Isn't that why we should affirm and send it back?
But in this case, there is no evidence that would support CPP's position that it has a genuine surplus. There was a discussion of the Brooklyn contract. Brooklyn has a 10-year supply agreement with CPP. CPP generates no electricity, but it's locked itself into supplying electricity to Brooklyn for a decade. Meanwhile, CPP's internal projections show a shortfall, the opposite of a surplus, over the same period of time. CPP can only perform that contract with artificial surplus by buying electricity for the purpose of selling it to Brooklyn.
But they have to buy electricity for the purpose of supplying its inhabitants too?
Yes, Your Honor, and CPP can easily and readily tailor its purchases to perfectly match the demand of its customers.
Does the Constitution require a perfect match?
In this case, yes, because the kilowatt hours that CPP is selling to non-inhabitants are easily avoidable. They are purchased for the purpose and only for the purpose of selling them outside the city, and would not be purchased if the non-inhabitants were not customers of the city.
Mr. Phillips, how do we apply, whether it's Toledo Edison or Britt, as you say, or Hans, or the Constitution for that matter, to with these issues, to this collaborative project for solar energy, where energy is actually going from Brooklyn to Cleveland as part of this whole sale arrangement?
Your Honor, CEI has absolutely no objection to the city's purchase of electricity from the solar farm, so long as that electricity is used to service in the inhabitants of the city, which it can easily do. It can continue to purchase under its agreement to purchase from the solar farm and simply reduce its other purchases under its requirements contracts. Remember, 45% of CPP's electricity is bought under requirements contracts. The expert testimony is that CPP is able to meet actual demand and to adjust its purchases to meet actual demand, which ebbs and flows on a daily, if not hourly, basis.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you.
Ms. Boyko, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honors. By entering into long-term contracts for electricity, first of all, Section 4 of the Constitution allows the purchase. And by entering into long-term contracts, the city is doing so primarily to serve its inhabitants. And it is also allowed to consider other items to make it cost-effective under Sections 4 and 6 of the Constitution. By entering into these long-term contracts, the city is able to secure long-term pricing, stable sources of power, explore local generation opportunities where transmission congestion costs are mostly avoided, mitigate the cost of meeting its resource adequacy obligations by the regional transmission organization, and diverse its generation supply portfolio, including increasing the supply of renewable energy. That is exactly what the city has done in this case. The city is bound by the Constitution. It cannot contract around the Constitution. The Constitution allows it to sell outside its surplus up to 50%. The Brooklyn contract was not even an issue in this case in the trial court because the Brooklyn contract wasn't in existence. So it is a red herring in this case. The city has surplus power from its portfolio of purchasing. It cannot get out of the requirement contracts, as CEI would lead you to believe. AMP has very restrictive and strict terms and conditions, and the city is not allowed to sell or dispatch that electricity into the wholesale market. The bottom line is that CEI is trying to prevent competition, and they want the city to sell on the wholesale as opposed to retail customers. And that is not part of the written Constitution, and it is not a preclusion of the Constitution or any court precedent. The court should apply and enforce the Constitution as written, refrain from creating new law that nullifies part of the Constitution, and it should reverse the 8th District to reinstate the judgment of the trial court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.